You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to Aggressive Negotiations and TFM's local watering hole for a crossover that you have been waiting for a very long time. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and I'm so excited to be on this crossover adventure with none other than Jedi Master John Mills. John, are you ready to dive into the richness that is Maul Shadow Lord tonight?
Master Rushing, I was born ready for this moment. I didn't realize how ready I was until I watched that show. But yes, I am ready, I am willing, and I am able to discuss Maul Shadow Lord.
That is just great news. I can't wait to dive into this show. It's so rich. Before we do, we're crossing over here with Aggressive Negotiations as well as the 602 Club. And so you can find us on X Twitter at either the Jedi Masters or the 602 Club. We are on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM as well as the Nerd Party. You can find us on our websites at thenerdparty.com or tfm.fan. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm or Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And of course, both of the shows we would humbly request and would be honored if you would review us over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, where they can give star ratings, any of those places. Plus, make sure you're following both of the shows, subscribed wherever you get your podcasts, and that way the episodes come to you as soon as they drop. John, I don't really think this is a show where we need to talk about what our anticipation level was or any of those things, because it was through the roof. New Star Wars animation was coming. And in all honesty, I feel like we just have so much to be able to dive into with these 10 episodes. And so, Maul coming back and his introduction, and we, you know, we're coming into the space where we know what the end of Maul's story is. We've seen that in Rebels, right? We've seen bits of what his life was like a little bit beyond this in Solo. We know what happened with everything at the end of the Clone Wars. And so this picking up about 3 years after that and showing his slow rise back to some sort of power is such an interesting story. And so I just wanted to start by talking about the idea of where Maul is when we meet him now. And what is it about, like, him as a character that just makes it interesting to come back into his life specifically at this point?
I will go ahead. I'll answer in sort of like reverse order on that one, where I think the reason it's right and, you know, correct to have a Maul-focused show at this point and focus on this point of his life is because he's the main character. In Clone Wars, in Phantom Menace, in Solo, in Rebels, he's anything from bit player to supporting cast. And he's always been a very fascinating character, but his arc has always been in the context of other people's arcs. Maul in relation to Ezra. Maul revealed as the head of Crimson Dawn. Maul in support of, essentially the Emperor's grand plan by taking over Mandalore. And he thought he had main character energy, but he wasn't the main character. This is Maul as main character. This is one of those things where it scratches an itch people don't realize they had with Maul, where we want to see him as the character we're following because we haven't gotten that driver's seat perspective with Maul up to this point. And so I think that's a very satisfying way to go into it. And in terms of using him in this time period, it answers a lot of questions that we still have about how the empire itself built itself and how it went about instituting its reign of terror when Vader's still learning how to move in a robot body. And the emperor hasn't fully revealed himself as a complete monster because he's behind the scenes making the politics and the political machine work for him so that he doesn't have to use force. And I think it's very interesting as well because this show also picks up right off with Maul fully aware Darth Sidious wants to kill me, but Darth Sidious didn't want to kill him in the Clone Wars. Darth Sidious wanted him causing that problem. So it's also interesting to come to him here where he's mature enough to realize, oh, I even served my usefulness as a pawn to get Palpatine to power. Palpatine wants to clean house completely. And Maul is one of those tokens where it's like, okay, you're no longer useful. But we know that Maul will be useful. So we know that that's embedded in the journey as well. He will ultimately be useful to the Empire as a creator of problems, as it were. So,
yeah, I love that. I think all of that's so well said as to why we would come into this space in Maul's life. And as I've been thinking about the show and just the realities of the character and where he is, you know, his desire for revenge against Sidious and the Empire for what they've done to him, basically, and, you know, his abandonment by Sidious in so many ways. What I love about, I think, you know, him as a character is that he is, you know, there are very few people, at least, that we get to see in Star Wars where they know and see Palpatine as being evil, the Empire as being evil. There are just not a ton of people in the galaxy at this point who feel like that, right? We know Bail Organa is one of them. We know Mon Mothma is one of them. There are others, of course, you know, the Jedi who still are surviving, you know, at this point. We don't know how many of them there are. But, you know, Maul is one of the first people that we meet in the Star Wars story who just truly wants to do something about it, though, which I find to be really fascinating. And in some ways, he's like this own proto-rebellion in and of himself. And his goal is to bring down the Empire. And so what I love in this is that there's a spirit there that is going to continue, and yet there's nothing altruistic necessarily about the reasons Maul has, right? The desire to bring down the Empire and Sidious is great, but his actual reasoning for that is extremely flawed and very selfish, you know, as the character is. And I find that to be a really interesting thing because, you know, we're so used to so many of the characters that we meet along the way wanting to do the right thing for the right reason, you know? And Maul kind of wants to do the right thing here, but for the wrong reasons. And I really find that to be kind of an interesting perspective to be able to explore.
I would actually tag on to that and counter with the idea that Maul doesn't want to do the right thing. Maul wants to do a thing. Maul is a great Sith because he is purely selfish. He embodies that completely. But I think what it is what we see is Maul is a chaos agent. And as a result, we're getting another demonstration of why Maul could never be the Lord of the Sith. He would have never beaten Sidious the way he was supposed to. So in a sense, I think it's fascinating because Maul winds up being another failed apprentice of Sidious's. Every apprentice we see Sidious have fails miserably. And that in and of itself exposes, I think, Sidious as a very flawed Sith Lord. He's not the right Sith Lord, which is a fascinating thing to peel apart. I think that Bender, jumping the gun there. I think that Maul is, if anybody has seen Futurama, he's Bender, who has a great line in an episode of Futurama where he's laying there and he says, "I didn't mean to help anyone or hurt anyone." Maul doesn't intend to do anything except get revenge. He wants to topple the Empire simply to do it. And, you know, he doesn't have... This is why he's so Sisyphean, is if he ever did get the boulder up to the top of the hill, or if he's like the Joker, if he ever caught the car, he wouldn't know what to do with it. He'd be completely confused about what to do. Maul can't win because he doesn't know how to win. He doesn't know why he would win. He's just doing. And he may have machinations to a certain point, but in terms of like a grand design, it taps out at a certain point. He doesn't have a Sidious level mentality, but he is another failed apprentice as a result of Sidious's.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. You know, I think we do kind of slightly disagree on this, which it, and this isn't one of those things where it's like neither of us like the show. I think I read it differently. I think I see Maul as being a character who is kind of has, you know, we even see it in the series. You know, he has this new respect for the Jedi. I think he even has a new respect for the Republic and all that was lost, because there's this. It almost seems like there's this realization in him is like, oh, this is what we were after. Like, this isn't what I want. Like, if this is what Sidious was after, this is not what I want, you know? And yes, I do think, like you're saying, there is a true sense of him just being utterly selfish in many ways. But there's something about him that I think flows throughout the series, which is that, because of his abandonment issues with Sidious, there's a sense to where he longs to try and do things differently than Sidious did, except that the only tools in his toolbox are to basically end up doing things the way Sidious did, because he doesn't have the ability to kind of see beyond or reach beyond. And he's kind of like stuck in that. And part of it, I think, is the brokenness that we even see him having experienced, you know, with almost dying and all that. And so, but yeah, there's just, I think it's really interesting to watch him be this character where at least from his perspective, I think there is this thought process of like there being kind of like more of a right thing to do. But he just doesn't have the ability to do that in a way that anybody would see as the right thing to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, he suffered tremendous abuse and bad parenting, basically, through his whole life. And he's a product of that. And so the tools in his toolbox, like you're saying, are limited. He's had a really unfortunate life. Like, I think that's one of the brilliant things about his arc through this show, is it gives you a sense of sympathy for what happened to him. I mean, repeatedly, we keep looking at different characters, and it's like Sidious is the only one that mm-hmm. we're never asked to have any sympathy for. Like, he is the problem. He's, even if you extend it to the sequel trilogy, he is the problem. He's the reason that sorrow exists through this entire saga. He's the ultimate evil.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously. But I don't know that we're disagreeing so much as I think there's just some nuance to which facet we're seeing.
Sure. Yeah,
we're seeing it from.
Yeah.
Because I'm just seeing it from the angle that Maul is just like, I think we would agree, Vader or even Dooku. Maul is incapable of being as like, He's evil because he's selfish.
Right.
He's pitiable because he's been wronged.
Right.
And I think you know, back to Rebels in his dying moment, he doesn't say to Obi-Wan, he'll avenge me, he'll avenge you. He says, he'll avenge, he says, will he avenge us?
Yeah.
Maul, at the end of his life, has that clarity to say, we've all been wronged. And mm-hmm. I think that in the context of this show, Maul very much wants to be in control. I think this is Maul's last grasp at truly finding a way forward for himself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and as we're talking here, I think one of the most interesting aspects of this, right, is that, you know, so much has been made in conversation for fans ever since the prequel trilogy and learning about the Jedi Order and how they, you know, took younglings at a very young age to train at the Jedi Temple away from their families, right? And I think the most interesting aspect of this is that we see just how great Jedi life was compared to Sith life. Being a Sith apprentice taken from your family very young was like being in the worst abusive relationship you could ever possibly imagine, right? And I think there's something just really beautiful about us actually getting the opportunity. And this is where I think when Maul says that, you know, to have respect for the Jedi, I think that's one of the things in his brain he's realizing is that actually the Jedi weren't the bad guys. They actually, you know, they shouldn't have necessarily been the people he was fighting. And I really like that juxtaposition between, you know, the life of the Sith and the life of the Jedi.
But see, you know what you just unlocked for me? By talking about the fact that we see the moment in flashback of when Maul was taken. He's taken at a young age like Anakin was. And we also know enough of Dooku's background to know that Dooku knows of his royal lineage on Sereno. That's why he's a count. He knows enough about that family life. I think this winds up supporting... And I'll give the team that put this show together credit, because there's no way this didn't enter into their brain. It's showing how the Jedi, while we might have recoiled at the idea of them taking children, the Jedi were right about family attachment, because Maul's first memory that conjures up is the traumatic separation from his brother. And Anakin's first memory, well, not first memory, but like Anakin's first moment, like formative moment for us, is his traumatic separation from his mother. And so maybe that's sort of showing how that's why Palpatine knew that Anakin would be a ripe plum for the picking, because, oh, they took him at the same age I took Maul. Oh, Yahtzee. Good. I know this kid is prime. I can work with this because I did this.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. You just unlocked that for me. That opens up a whole bunch of stuff now. Ooh,
yeah,
interesting.
I'm, you know, it was one of those things where as you were talking, it came clear to me in my mind. It's one of the things that, you know, just makes podcasting so fun and talking with friends about these shows like this is because there is so much depth, and we know that the people behind the show are working diligently to bring all these pieces together. And again, they're doing exactly what George said, is it rhymes, right?
Yeah.
There are rhymes within rhymes. And I think, you know, there's a real beauty in that, because, you know, one of the things that we see here is that, you know, every time that Maul speaks to Devon, he is speaking to her about her and his relationship he longs to have with her as her master and her being the apprentice. Yet at the same time, he's also just speaking about himself, about seeing things from a new perspective, what we do to survive, the fragility of institutions, a stolen future, squandered gifts, and the need to survive. Like every single thing that he will say to Devon, every conversation they have is him not only priming the pump in her to have her turn, but it's also a peek into his soul and where he's been and what he's been thinking and what he's been learning, especially in these last 3 years of trying to survive, right? And, you know, his main goal now is to find a weapon that will help him bring down Sidious because he know he can't do it by himself. In fact, he realizes, I think, especially by the end of this season, just to how far he is from being able to bring down somebody like a Sidious, right? Because of the experience he has with Vader. He's just not good enough anymore. And part of that is because part of him is broken. Literally, his body just doesn't work the same as it used to. And therefore, you know, he needs an apprentice who will be stronger than him, the same way Sidious wanted an apprentice who could surpass him.
And I didn't even think about it, that while Vader is fighting Maul, they're both half machine.
Right, exactly.
Because of what they went through at the hands of Obi-Wan. So it's two Obi-Wan Kenobi survivors going at each other. I mean, I knew that part of it, but like, it's actually funny on so many levels.
They could just be part of the I Hate Obi-Wan Kenobi club.
Exactly. Like, wait a minute. Obi-Wan did that to you? Obi-Wan did this to me. What are we fighting
for? Do you
want to
go get a beer?
Yeah. No, but like, that even unlocks, that gives how mindless when Vader comes at him. Like, Vader should have made a play for Maul. He'd be like, listen, look what happened to us. But together, we'd be even better. Like, oh, wow. That's a whole thing.
Wow. And I think, so this is the thing that's so interesting about that, right? And we'll talk about Vader later, but I think it's really important to say this now in the context of Maul. Vader has accepted who he is now as mostly machine and found a way to utilize that to his benefit. Maul is still trying to do the same thing he always did. And this will, and we know that to be the case because it's literally going to play out in his end. When Maul has his end with Obi-Wan Kenobi on the, you know, the plains of Tatooine, he literally tries the exact same move he used on Qui-Gon. And Obi-Wan is ready because Obi-Wan has learned and grown and changed and matured. Maul can't and doesn't do that. He just is incapable. He's like all of us, and so many of us, I think, have had this experience in our lives, right? Where like, man, we need to get past something in our lives, and yet we find ourselves doing the same thing over and over and over again. And if we're blessed, we get past it. Right? We find a way with help from others or, you know, spiritual help or therapy or whatever it is to finally get past. And Maul just can't do that. And I think that's what's fascinating.
Well, at a certain point for Maul in specific, I'm not saying this about everybody, but like for Maul in specific, it's he needs the humility to admit that he can't do it on his own. Maul's incapable of doing that. But that's interesting because when you pair it with Devin, he is, to your point, at least recognizing now that he needs a second. He needs somebody else that is more than a Rook, is more than a Mandalorian, is more than anybody else could be. It needs to be somebody like him that can be molded, that can use the Force, that he can turn toward a certain end.
Well, and this is, I think, the thing is that he doesn't realize, right, is that if he hadn't betrayed Docky and he had joined Docky and Devin, they could have found a way, doing things the right way, to try and bring down this empire. And again, that he can't, the problem is that, you know, he's not a Sith anymore. But he's also not going to be a Jedi. He's just a dark side user, but he can't think outside the box and the framework to which Sidious gave him. He doesn't have the ability to do that. And I think that's because, and this is one of the things that's so fascinating, right? Because of that dark side nature of always pursuing the easy way, always pursuing that which is right in front of you, your passions and your desires, and fully giving into that, Maul can't grow past that because he won't allow himself to. And I think that's it's something incredibly beautiful because, you know, as he seduces Devon to the dark side, it's not the Sith side, but it's definitely the dark side.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's what makes this so interesting is, you know, in Ahsoka, we had Shin and we had Baylan, and they're dark side users, but of a type we hadn't seen before. And this is kind of, I think, the first taste of that idea of like seeing a dark side user, but they're not Sith, but they're leaning into the principles of giving in to the dark side as a harness for their power. And that's what I'm so excited to be able to see here, because I think Maul's arc here allows us to be able to kind of explore maybe like this proto relationship that Baylan in Ahsoka seems to have kind of figured out more so than Maul does. And it seems as though there's going to be a really interesting connection maybe, hopefully, between that story and what we're going to see in Ahsoka season two that allows us to kind of unpack these ideas further.
Well, what I think is also very, very interesting is it all starts with an earnest detective who's looking for the solution to a crime, a guy doing his job, trying to do the best for everybody. And simply because he doesn't like he's in a double bind, you know, Lawson is in a double bind because Maul shows his face. Lawson sees it. Lawson is supposed to do a certain thing that would bring the Empire in. He tries to fight it. And I think it's this interesting thing where you get that pull of fate, like even everything Maul is going through. Once Maul shows himself, all it is a question of delaying the inevitable, that it's never going to be avoidable. And that, I think, layers over Maul's whole thing, because we know that his end is unavoidable. His tragedy is ever present because it's just bound by certain things. So even somebody coming in and trying to do a good thing in relation to Maul, it's just like a whirlpool. It just sucks everything into it and down into everything. And it's so beautiful how you wind up with good intentions wanting to do right, and it still goes wrong simply because simply going near Maul poisons you.
The road to hell, man.
It's
something because have you ever heard, has anyone ever told you the tale of Maul Shadow Lord?
Right.
The tragedy of Maul Shadow Lord. Because, yeah, you're right. That's what this is. And what's fascinating, too, I think, to broaden out just a little bit as we're talking about Maul and his arc and everything, is the people that he has around him. Because one of the beauties I see here is that Maul is this character because of what he experienced with Sidious. If you're loyal to him, he will be loyal to you to a fault. Right?
Right.
He is not willing to give up those in his service who are loyal to him, you know? And I thought that was something that's really fascinating. You, in that second to last episode, you know, we see him sending people over the river until it's just him left.
Yeah.
And why is that? Is because those people have proven loyalty to him. They deserve then his protection. He has taken on truly that Godfather-like persona that, yes, if you pledge yourself to me and you do the things that I ask you to do, I'm going to take care of you if that costs me my own life, because that's what I've pledged, because I'm going to be different in Sidious. And that's the kind of the sad state of Maul, which is just if he took like two more steps, he could be on the light side, you know?
And Yes, and that's also the quasi frustrating. It's not frustrating, but it like tragic, sad, heartbreaking thing is Daki doesn't do the Jedi thing of like, no, we'll never talk to him. No, we'll never, like, Daki is still trying to be a Jedi master and give Maul the opportunity to be loyal, to be good. But there is a limit because he betrays Daki the moment it benefits him. So his loyalty has a limit. The minute he sees a, you know, if he were truly loyal, then he stays with Daki to keep fighting Vader. So his loyalty has a ceiling.
Right. And I think that that's because he's choosing at that point, do I go help Devin or do I help right. Daki? And it's like, no, I'm not letting go of the one thing I can believe that can help me bring down Sidious. I just, and again, that's where the selfishness comes in, right? He's willing to sacrifice others for his own benefit, and right. anyone really for his own benefit. And, you know, I thought that that was incredibly interesting in the show. And, you know, before we kind of leave Maul, I did want to ask you about all of his sidekicks. You know, you've got Rook and you've got Spybot. You've got Vario, who kind of brings into the fold because, you know, he uses him. You've got him building up his Shadow Collective again by taking over the Pikes again. And so I just wanted to give us an opportunity here just to be able to talk about these people around Maul and, you know, what characters stayed with you, which were the ones that you were actually like, oh dang, that one died.
Oh, well, I mean, I thought that the I was honestly surprised by Rook dying. I thought Rook had a chance, and I wish she had continued, but that's just because I really liked her as a character. She was a very interesting Mandalorian.
And I loved that Vanessa Marshall got her desire, which was that yeah. her death would be her lungs pulled out through her throat, and that's the yeah. sound they were going for.
I think that, you know, in terms of Maul's coterie, for me, it really does begin and end with Spybot, because I loved Spybot so much. He was so great, and he made me laugh. Because he was an evil chopper. And
that's a great way to put it. He's like, you know, chopper, but completely evil. Yes.
Yeah. Actually evil chopper. People yes, make the yes, joke yeah. about chopper being evil, but chopper's just a jerk. Spybot's actually evil. And Maul actually shows Spybot affection. There's even at least one moment where he almost like scratches him like a dog behind the ears.
It's because it's like that's his pit bull. Right. You know,
right.
like he's terrible to everybody else. But to Master, you know, he's the lovable, you know, pit bull.
And I wish I could take credit for this, but Spybot's death has a very interesting echo for anybody that played The Force Unleashed, where when Proxy, the training droid for Starkiller, gets killed out with his dying emission, he goes, Master, and Spybot does the same thing. And I'm like, man, that's so beautiful. Like, I didn't catch it on the first watch, but it was like, oh my gosh. But like, it still even shows, like you're saying, Spybot's a jackass to everybody but Maul. And it's that loyal pit bull mm-hmm. sort of yep. thing. It's a terrifying entity to everybody except the one person that it will show loyalty to. So, I mean, I loved Spybot. I love Vario. I thought he was great. I thought simply using, I forget the alien race's name, but, you know, the pod racer from episode one, I think it was like Rats Terrell or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And having him show up in that robot body.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yes,
just,
yep.
just the way it's that fantastic. He gets away with it when he kills Demas is just beautiful. and I thought he was funny. He was he was Joe Pesci in Lethal Weapon 2.
Well, he's like Joe Pesci in all the Lethal Weapons that he's in, where it's like he just won't stop talking, you know?
Right.
Less annoying, honestly. Yeah, I mean, like, I love you bringing up all of them. I thought that his troop was fantastic. You know, even having the Dathomiri Knight brothers that serve him. And you know, he's brought in a part of his family that he lost, you know, you know, these characters obviously mean a lot to him, because when he sees them both die, of course, one of them actually, you know, utilizing his own life to help save Maul's life was fantastic, you know? And so, I mean, there's so much about that I really love. And, you know, it's kind of sad that most of them are gone at this point. And that means that for season two, it'll be fascinating to see as, you know, we add characters like Dryden Voss and hopefully others, that as he's building this menagerie of the Shadow Collective again, that we'll get characters that kind of play interesting roles next to Maul. Because I thought the beauty of the relationship with Rook is that for Maul, it's the one person that was able to question him. She does it respectfully, but they had a relationship to which her loyalty had earned her the ability to say, "Master, is this really the right call? Is this the best idea?" I thought that was great. And you know,
you're right.
Every great mob movie or mob story has that same type of character, and I thought they did it really well.
Well, and you can see how it winds up being, it'll be interesting to see whether it's a net positive or a net negative for Maul to lose that voice in his ear, because Devin's not going to challenge him like that. Vario doesn't have the stones to do it. And Two Boots and Riley, they're not going to do it. So maybe Voss can occupy that, but we also know that Voss is going to answer to him. So that dynamic will develop in a specific fashion, as it were.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good call on Rook. Like, she was the trusted lieutenant, the only one who he would listen to without smacking around or killing.
Yeah. Yeah.
For questioning him in that way. Yeah.
You know, Devin is such an interesting character in this season, of course. And part of that is, you know, we didn't get the opportunity, say, to follow Kanan's character and kind of see the struggle that he goes through on surviving, right? The only opportunity we got there was John Jackson Miller's fantastic book that allows us a little bit of insight into that, A New Dawn, which if people haven't read, I highly recommend. John Jackson Miller, fantastic
Super
author,
good book.
And it's a great book. And I think, you know, we even talked about that back on the 602 Club together here, so... But I really loved the way in which Devin is the Jedi character who has survived, and yet she knows that her potential and her purpose and all that she was looking to be is gone. And so it leads to this crisis of principle. Right? Are the principles that I grew up with, are they eternal? Or do I need to adapt and change to the times? Right? Do I just need to become malleable? Which is exactly what Maul is telling her. Whereas, you know, Daki on the other side, you know, she's got the shoulder angel and the shoulder devil speaking into her the whole time. And she's kind of stuck in the middle. And she is very much the character who is struggling, and you can completely understand why, because the foundation of her existence has been pulled out from under her, and she's reeling, especially since, you know, she and her master have spent the last few years trying to survive, and it's not been easy.
Yes, and I think that calling back to Kanan is a very good thing, because we know that Kanan decides, I'm going to live my life as if I were a Jedi without being a Jedi. And Devin is struggling with that, because she's sitting there, we're hungry, we're starving, And Docky is still trying to say, even in dark times, the Force will provide for us. We will, like, he's been alive long enough with the faith that he doesn't lose faith. And she's so young that she doesn't have the opportunity. It hasn't set in her at this point. It's something that's still forming. So Order 66 happens at a very crucial time before she can truly become, you know, who she should have become.
And as you say that, I'm thinking of this very interesting, and I think it's very timely aspect, but it's also something that has happened throughout all times, right? And but I mean, we've become much more aware of it in the last 100 years, in the sense that Docky and Lawson are both parents, basically, who are fighting to keep their kids from being radicalized by the easier path, right? The more seductive path. And that's the thing, is that Maul is incredibly smart in the way that he seduces Devon to the dark side, because he gives her all of the things that she lost. Potential, purpose, hope, and not just surviving, but life, actual life, right? And so that's what I think, and the way that he structures every single moment with her, he's slowly building towards that with her, even though she's seen him do some pretty horrible things, like the look on her face when Maul destroys the AT-AT. Or, I mean, I don't think it's quite an AT-AT. It's the
AT-ST.
One from, yeah, it's the
AT-ST. It's an early AT-ST, chicken walker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the one we would see in Rebels. And so there's that moment, and he just destroys it and walks away, you know, because cool guys don't look at explosions. But the look on her face is kind of one of horror because of the way that he's treated these stormtroopers, to which they know aren't clones, then they're not droids, they're actual beings. And there's something on her face that is kind of horrified by that. But yet at the same time, his seduction to his side is so pitch perfect that by the time we get to the moment where she says, I'm ready to give in to her base emotions, her hate and revenge, like, he's played this perfectly in the same way that, you know, Sidious played it perfectly with Anakin.
Yeah, but I mean, what I also think is super interesting is we get another crucial moment. Obi-Wan screams no when he sees his master killed. Luke, when his first master gets killed, screams no. When she sees her master killed, she screams no. It's all very, it's like poetry, it rhymes. We're going to make that joke repeatedly, folks. And I think it's interesting because that's the ultimate philosophical question. You know what philosophically you're supposed to do in a crisis or traumatic situation. But there are so many different factors that go into how a person responds to it. Like, I was having a discussion with one of my kids, and I said, you know, it was a long-ranging discussion, and I just mentioned, you know, yeah, and if somebody did something bad to you, you know, they'd better pray that the cops get to them first, because they're not going to want me to find them. And my kid said back to me, and I'll give my kid credit for saying, well, that's not very Christian of you. And I said, well, that's true. But I also know that I hope I'm never put to that test, because I can promise you I'm not going to be Jesus in that moment. Like, it was one of those things where if you look at all of these different factors, Luke is escaping the Death Star when he sees Obi-Wan cut down, but he has his friends calling him and saying, come on, come with us. Obi-Wan is old enough to take the trials to prove he's ready for knighthood. So when Qui-Gon gets struck down, yes, it's awful, but he's able to rise to the challenge, as it were, philosophically. Even though he has that moment of attacking Maul, it's because it truly is a fight or die moment. He doesn't have a choice there. And then when she sees it, she's being attacked by an inquisitor. She's had her life pulled out from under her. This whole thing kicks off because she was arrested for stealing fruit to live. So you get the whole thing about how a just law is applied without concern for nuance or empathy. You get all of those sorts of things that go in. And so you see this different set of circumstances. Well, what if we change the factors like this? Would the person still respond in the ideal fashion? I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, and I love the moment. There's a couple of Man of Steel moments, actually, in this show. There's the whole point in the very first episode where Maul goes to get Vario from prison, and he has the lightsaber, and it's just going across the wall the same way, you know, you had Zod at the end with the laser vision going to kill the person. And very, very Man of Steel moment. There's another one, too, where Devin, you know, where she wants to go after Vader, and she says, "I will kill him." And the cadence is the exact same as Zod when he says, "I will find him." And I thought that was pretty beautiful because it's that resonance of hate in her, right? That she doesn't care about the principles she grew up with in this moment. All she cares about is getting her revenge. And I think there's something just incredibly interesting about the portrayal. The voice acting here was phenomenal. I really loved the portrayal of Gideon Alden. I thought she did a great job with this character.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, having her master be Dennis Haybert.
Dennis Haysbert is one of my favorite actors out there.
But the interplay between them was just so wonderful. And again, I think you rightly said it, right? This is a character who has been through and seen so much. And So he's just rolling with the punches, and he's trying to help his Padawan be able to do the same.
Yeah.
And yet, the unfortunate thing for him is that he is behind the eight ball because, again, what Maul is offering her is everything that she's missing in life.
Yes.
And it's very difficult to compete with that, especially when she can basically almost sense that the immediate gratification of everything that she's desired in her whole life will come from giving in to what Maul has said. And again, there's another great allusion to the world that we live in. That's the other lesson. Yes, everything could be saying you could get what you want, but now we're about to see the consequences of giving in to that life.
Well, you also have the parallel of parenting, basically. I mean, you know, Star Wars at its core is about parenting. And so you have Lawson with Riley, and you see a very loving father who, I mean, listen, the scene at the end where Lawson's about to sacrifice himself, and his final words essentially to Riley are like, "Listen, I know I let work get in the way, and I was just always trying to do the best, and I'm sorry for the times that I fell short." That was like an arrow to my heart right there, because that's a discussion I've had in my own heart and in my own mind when I find myself consumed by my job and stuff like that, where it's like, "Oh, hey, you know, kiddo, I'm so sorry that I've been consumed." Like it's like, wow, very resonant. But like, and you have Docky sitting there trying to be the good father, for lack of a better term. You know, he's being the good parent. He's like, "Yeah, I know it's tough, but this is how we do. We're not going to give up who we are because of this." And Maul is the perfect encapsulation of all the things that the good parent is fighting against that are influences from life. Immediate gratification, giving in to your worst impulses, getting even, getting revenge, only worrying about you and making things right for you and not how it impacts anybody else. Like, it's everything that makes Vader Vader and the Inquisitors the Inquisitors. But Maul is able to dress it up in such a way he's not pointing at them and saying, hey, you'll get to be like them. Because if he pointed at Vader and the Inquisitors and said, hey, if you do what I'm saying, you can be just like them. No, Maul is saying, oh, no, I hate them, too. No, we're going to be a different type of selfish than they are. And it's like it's and that's the thing the parents are fighting against. It's like, no, it's all selfish. It's all bad. It yeah. all goes to the wrong thing. And well, that's so the beauty key
of what that's the beauty of what Maul does, right? Because he presents himself as basically, I'm not perfect, but I'm not really that far off of everything that you've wanted. And you know, mm-hmm. you just need to see me from a different perspective. You know, in some ways, he's kind of like the classic abuser, right? Like,
right. The abused person becomes an abuser. That's yes. That's an echo that happens in reality.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, and you mentioning Lawson, I mean, you know, I love Lawson's arc here because we have Jannix as this new planet, and this planet is incredibly interesting because Lawson is caught in a space where it seems like this planet has made some sort of deal with the syndicates where they seem to mm-hmm. have some sort of reign, right, over this planet and room to maneuver. And it's like, as long as they don't get too out of line, we'll let you be here. And so from the beginning, this show is taking place in the moral gray area, right, which is mm-hmm. where the rest of the show is going to play itself out. We're not going to necessarily be just playing in the light and the dark, but we're going to be almost in this space where they're mixing, and can that really happen, or should there be, as we talked about with, you know, with the idea of Devon, should certain principles be immutable, and that it doesn't matter what position we're in, we should stick to. And I love Lawson's arc because he's that guy, like you said, who's caught between a rock and a Star Destroyer, and he knows what the Empire is, and he fears it. And I think that's the thing, you know, I kind of hope he's not dead, because I want to explore more. What was it about Lawson's past that makes him fear the Empire the way he does?
I would leave it for books, because I'm going to go ahead and say that I hope he is dead, because I don't want to see what they would do to him if he isn't. I don't want anything worse to happen to Lawson. And I know that, you know, Marok and Crow would not treat him well for his part in all of these things. But but what's really interesting is, I think that it's a part of American history that people forget, is we look at it and we go, oh, look at this. They've made an agreement and the syndicates can operate so long as they don't get too out of control. I hate to be the cynic here, but that's sort of how things have always operated, perhaps even more so in the past, probably still the same way today. We'd like to think not. But like, if you look back at the mafia in the United States history, the mafia was basically its own governmental system. And the agreement between the U.S. government and the mafia was, look, just... if so long as you guys just target each other and it doesn't bleed out into the streets, we could leave each other alone, because we don't want this to get worse than it is, right? We get it. People are going to gamble. People are going to go, in search of prostitution. People, you guys can manage that stuff because we can't do that because it's illegal. Okay, you guys are the safety valve for the vices in society. Just don't let it get messy. And we can come to some sort of agreement. So to me, I think that Jannix, if anything, is a very realistic depiction of how society itself really works. It's just we all want to be, I guess, like Riley or the Jedi and say, well, that's not the way that things are, because the good guys should be in control. Whereas I would say I'm Camp Lawson, where it's like, look, I got to deal with reality here. And I'm not going to push them too hard. And maybe if something happens, I'm going to be like, hey, Vario, I got to bring you in. What happened? Okay, just tell me something I can put in a report so that nobody gets too mad, okay? Because all you guys did was shoot each other. So, like, let just give me enough that I can sort of, like, tamp this down, okay? Is that cool? Like, I think that that makes Lawson, I think, one of the most interesting characters in one of the most interesting positions in all of current Star Wars lore. Like, I'm in love with the character. And I think that the voice talent that they got for Lawson is absolutely fantastic, because his voice carries this beautiful, like, he feels, I feel like I understand him just because his voice sounds like that the dad who's got a tough job that he's not necessarily in love with, but he's doing it right. And the 50 cups of coffee that he has sitting on his desk, because he's a coffee addict. He's not a drinker. He doesn't do drugs, but boy, he's going to drink coffee. His caffeine is going to get some blood in it every so often in his system, sort of thing. So yeah, Lawson's arc is super interesting because he is a good person, but he's way more realistic about the world than the Jedi ever were.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a beauty to this character, and in the sense that, like, man, this dude, he has this interesting shady past you hear about with Rena a little bit. He's got a broken marriage. He's had trouble being there as a father because his job takes him away so much. And yes, he has a calf addiction, which I thought was fantastic. Why don't we have those cups now? I mean, Disney, you could be printing money.
Like, they giving are those sleep at the wheel. Yeah,
give those cups
I would
away
buy
at
a set of
Galaxy's
them.
Edge, you know?
Yep. Sell them in sets of four. I will buy them tomorrow.
And what is really interesting, I think, about his story is the way in which it allows us to see how the Empire takes over a world, right? They do the thing that everybody feared the Republic would do in the Clone Wars, right? You think of the Mandalorian arc. They're afraid to call in the Republic because they don't think they'll leave. The Empire actually doesn't leave. Yep. And I think that's what's really fascinating. And in some ways, you know, Maul is right in that the Empire needs to come down, and that if we stand together, we can take down the Empire. But it's not going to be revenge that makes that happen. It's not going to be his criminal organization that happens, but it's going to be those who fight for the rights of all to be free who are going to help this win, you know, help get the win across the line. And I love that that's tied to us watching a man know what the Empire is going to do, not want to call them because he knows the moment they come, they're never leaving. Yep. And just have to live through the consequences because his dumb droid is following protocol and won't let it go. And, you know, man, the cast of characters around Lawson I love his son Riley. I thought that was really well done. I love that we get to see him playing Bodekin, you know, which we actually saw the first head of that lacrosse style stick in Anakin's room. Phantom Menace is great, but man, I will say, I think you mentioned in a chat that you loved Two Boots.
Oh yes.
I hated Two Boots.
What?
And I hated
what?
Two Boots because he's the one
all
who
right,
causes
this is,
all this to happen.
This is our Rogue One moment right here. How dare
his
you?
His master.
How dare you come at my man Two Boots here, okay? Two Boots is actually, yes, I get he's a droid, but Two Boots is the absolutely perfect, and I mean perfect, portrayal of the rule follower who doesn't listen to the practical person, or the, you know, basically somebody who has process and protocol is like, this is how we do things. This is the way things. But the thing is, Lawson is the guy that's like, listen, that's not how the world really works. Okay. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. You got to think about second order consequences. The thing is, Two Boots reminded me of people I might know and work with, where I'm the one that's the Lawson that's like, let's think about what happens three steps down the line here, guys. Okay, you sent the email. Okay, cool. You technically did the right thing there. However, it would have been the wiser thing to take care of this problem before we sent the email, because now we got 10 people, you know, that sort of thing. Two Boots, I thought, is great also because Two Boots has how do you say this about a droid, but like Two Boots has a good heart. He's not doing it maliciously. He's not, if anything, this gets back to the whole, the episode one duality thing, where you have Spybot and you have Two Boots and you have the two droids who are the loyal bodyguards and companions of our two main characters. And you see how they are reflections of the other. Spybot always does exactly what he's told. Absolutely 100% of the time. Is that a good thing? Well, no, because Maul is telling him to do terrible things. And he just does it without questioning. And if anything, Lawson is... It's interesting because Lawson, it's almost like Two Boots is the stubborn child that won't listen to the parent. No, this is the right way to do things. Yeah, I'm trying to give you, if anything, Two Boots is an echo of the relationship between Docky and Devin, right? Devin, if you would just listen to me, trust me, this is going to be better. And Lawson saying the same thing to Two Boots. If you would just listen to me, things are going to go better. And both of them refuse to listen. And that's what leads to the whole, you know, trail of tears that we go through here. So, yeah, I'm team Two Boots. And you know it. How dare you?
Look, the thing is like, I don't hate the character. I just got frustrated with the character. And it's for exactly all the reasons that you said. You know, it's because he's the character who can't see beyond just the simple binaries, right?
And
that's a part of the story. And I love that, you know, in the end, he comes around, which is great. I want to talk a little bit about the Inquisitors. Honestly, what's interesting with them is there's not so much to talk about because they barely say anything. But I wanted to ask you just about the portrayal of them here in this season, because we've seen Inquisitors. We've actually seen both of these Inquisitors before. We've seen the end of the Crow with Ahsoka and in the Tales of the Jedi. And we'll see the end of Morok and Ahsoka. So she's responsible for both of their deaths in some way, shape, or form, depending on what happened to Morok and all that. I just wanted to ask you about how they portrayed them here.
I thought it was great. I loved seeing more of them. I loved seeing them sort of in their prime sort of thing. But also, I love, you know, you mentioned Crow. I mean, technically, 11th brother, I think, is Crow's name. I love the fact that when 11th brother goes up against Ahsoka, she just takes him out like a punk. And I think that it's great because now we have him here and we see how formidable he really is. So now if I go back to Tales of the Jedi, it really reinforces that it's not that he's a throwaway character. It's that Ahsoka's just that good.
Yeah.
Ahsoka's just that awesome. That
I
it's
mean,
like,
she
oh,
took
okay,
out
now-
Maul, she took out the Crow, she took out, right. You know, Morok. I mean, come on. She's...
Well, But the thing is, it's like with Morok, even I loved Morok when we met him in Ahsoka, because I love an interesting mask and costume. And I was like, wow, But now, even because you're talking earlier about the fact that we saw this, you know, these, you know, if only Maul had joined with the two Jedi to work together. But would that necessarily be the case? Because Marok's working with a Jedi and his apprentice, and instead what's happened is they're poisoned and they go to the dark side. So that in and of itself winds up being a very beautiful little echo of, it's very tempting during this show to say, oh, look, they're working with Maul. And maybe that would mean if Maul were less selfish, he could have become good. No, I think that if anything, you look at where Marok goes with everything, and you look at how this resolves itself with Daki and Devin, it shows that once you start working with a dark side user, no matter what, all that comes of it is bad. There's no way to, you know, it's just like Yoda said, once, consume you at will, as it did Obi-Wan's apprentice, forever will it dominate your destiny. Like, it's that thing where it's like, oh, okay, well, we'll just work with Marok. Oh, wait. And all of a sudden we're not Sith, but we're bad people. And, oh, well, you know, we'll work with Maul because it's a means to an end. Yeah, well, Daki's dead, and now she's going to turn to the dark side. There is no compromise with evil. It's not possible. All evil can do is make things less good. And I think that's what you see with Marok here. And at least 11th Brother has now demonstrated that Ahsoka killing him was pretty damned impressive.
Well, and I love, too, the way that they're portrayed in the season, where they just literally come across as the hounds of hell, you know?
Yeah.
And the way that they act is very much in that way of just like these bloodhounds tracking down the enemy. I thought that was great, you know? And so,
well, just, I'll go ahead and say what I really loved is when they get away through the underground toxic river.
Yeah.
Which is in and of itself its own commentary, where everybody's like, oh, this is terrible. It's like, yeah, well, the toxic waste has got to go somewhere. And it's like, it's that, yep. This is how social commentary should be done, folks, where it gives you that moment where you're kind of like, yeah, I don't think enough about that, do I? Yeah. You know, like, it's ugh. But it all, even that is a visual echo of the fact that Jannix always has this rotten underbelly, this toxic underbelly of the criminal syndicates that they're willing to work with, they're willing to turn a blind eye to. That in and of itself is toxic. So at its core, there's toxicity. But that moment when Maul gets away and they're both standing there and Marok just says, I can't remember the exact line at this point. I haven't watched it enough times, but he just says, it's like, all right, tell him they're on the way. And, you know, when he said that, I got to ask you, did you think as I did, he was like, oh, are you guys going to, no, you guys aren't going to do, is him? Do you mean him? Like when I heard tell him, I was like, him? Do you mean him? Is him coming? That sort of, were you in the same boat?
Yes.
Okay.
But I thought that maybe it might be like the Grand Inquisitor. And so, because I didn't think they were actually going to bring Vader in this season, but they did. And the Dark Lord of the Sith arrives. And, you know, I just kind of love that Ahsoka was right at the end of the Clone Wars, where she's like, man, you would have been in real trouble if Anakin had shown up, because the way you're fighting, he would basically have mopped the floor with you. And she was right. So, again, portrayal of Vader here. And then, like, we finally get to see this thing to which fans have been thinking about, they've seen in comics, but Maul and Vader just going at it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's handled beautifully. Absolutely beautifully, because Vader moves like Vader. He doesn't move like Anakin. And I think that another beautiful thing is layered in the decision not to have Vader speak at all. I think is the most beautiful tribute you can have to the fact that this is the first time we're encountering Vader as a character after James Earl Jones has left us. And so having him speechless in this segment, there's a very valid character reason for it. There's a very valid story reason for it. But I think layered onto that is I will always, whether it's my own interpretation or not, I will always take it as a beautiful tribute to the fact that there is no other voice for him. And maybe at some point in the future, we'll see him and they will use technology to have Vader speak. Okay, that's fine. I understand that's the way it's going to be. Cool, man. I got no problem with it. But here, this is our first time. Let's take a break from the voice. Let's just have Vader breathing. That's okay. But in terms of his fighting, I just thought it was so beautiful because it is, and I know that there's a clip of Sam Witwer going around talking about it too. It is somebody who doesn't have to overexert themselves. Everybody else is doing acrobatics and flips and turns and everything like that. And Anakin's like, yeah, you're going to be there. Yeah, you're going to be there. Yeah, you're going to be there. I don't need to turn that. Yeah, okay. And when does he lose his cool? Is just like when Luke tags him on Cloud City on the shoulder. Docky does it. And then Vader's like, oh, okay, you got past it. All right, I got to end this. And ends it, obviously. Sorry, I know I rambled a little bit there. But yes, I loved bringing Vader in. I will always treasure and never forget watching that moment with my kid. And I knew it was coming and she didn't. And Rook gets dragged off. And I'm sitting there waiting. Rook goes off. You hear the crunching. And then you hear that first. And my kid goes, oh, no. Oh, my gosh. And Vader walks out. And she puts her hands to the side of her head. And she goes, oh, they're cooked. Oh, they're cooked. They don't stand. Oh, my gosh. They're cooked. And I'm just sitting there with a big smile on my face because I'm like, just wait till you see the next episode, kid. And it's just, what a thrill. Okay, anyway, sorry. I'll step back off my soapbox at this point.
No, man, I love it because, you know, the introduction, the fact that they went with the Splinter of the Mind's Eye type of cover, like you said, the fact that Anakin doesn't speak at all because he's not Anakin anymore, he's Vader, and he doesn't have anything to say to these people. He is the machine hunting, right? You know, he's the Terminator at this point, and he doesn't have any quippy lines because he doesn't care. And like you said, that moment where Docky tags him and does that kind of like Obi-Wan move, right? Where he's got his one hand out and the lightsaber up, you know, and it's like, oh, that's triggering. And the next thing you know, mm-hmm. he is just hammering him until he's dead. And I love that too, because Docky is actually, he's proven to be correct that the way to fight evil is not with more evil. Because he fights Vader cool, calm, and collected, and he's the only one who scores a hit. And maybe if there had been other people there fighting alongside him the same way, they might have all won. It's not emotion and rage and unpredictability that's needed. It's calm, cool, collected. And that's the very thing to which, you know, I remember, and we're going to cover this. We keep teasing that this is going to happen, but it's happening this year. The episode 3 novelization. And there's that moment in that where Mace Windu tells Obi-Wan Kenobi exactly why they've sent him to face off against Grievous. And the reason is because Obi-Wan is a master of all of the classic forms. He is not making up for any deficiencies the way that Mace Windu is or the way that Yoda does because of his size. And Obi-Wan proves that over and over and over again, right? We saw it at the end of the Revenge of the Sith. where he's able to take out Anakin, and he could have killed him if he had wanted to, the way in which he does the same thing in the Kenobi series, right? The way in which he takes down Maul in Twin Sons. I mean, and so if they had all fought the way Docky had wanted, they probably would have been able to beat Vader. And I think that's really fascinating. But I agree with you. Everything you said about the way that they bring Darth Vader into this season, you know, it is that same type of feeling that you had when he showed up in Rogue One, right? He doesn't say anything and he just mows people down because he doesn't give. He's like a honey badger, right? He doesn't give a, you know, it's great. And it's such beautiful usage of a character that's so important to the series, and it makes him absolutely terrifying. And I think that's what's so interesting then with that in the background now, as Maul puts together this Shadow Collective and we start connecting to Solo, right, with where we're going to go with Dryden Vos coming in and all of that. Like, I love, you know, I was so excited when I heard this show was coming out, because I have wanted to know, how did Maul get to the place he was at the end of Solo, where he seems to be in charge of this vast criminal empire? I want to know how Maul becomes the Godfather. And the fact that we're building to those type of things is super exciting to me. So I loved the connection that Dryden Vos is the one who wants to use Maul so he can be at the top of Crimson Dawn. And it's just another place where this is truly staying very true to the mob type, stories, right? I'll join your collective, but you got to do me a favor.
Yeah, and again, you can't make a deal with evil. Once you invite the vampire in, you lost. You lost all your power. The vampire's in control now. And your pride, Dryden Vos is so stupid that he thinks he can welcome Maul in and Maul will respect any agreement that they have.
The scorpion always bites.
And I think that there's also the whole thing with Vario is, I live with this sad knowledge in my heart that as much as I like Vario and I think he's funny, and I love the character, and I don't want anything to happen to him because I think he's a very effective character. I think he's great comic relief. I think he's voiced perfectly. All of that type of stuff. Maul says at one point that, I can't remember the exact line, but he basically says, you know, that death awaits everybody who betrayed him. Well, Vario, you seem to forget that you betrayed Maul. So when Maul kills you, not if, when he kills you, it's just like Lawson with Two Boots. You're just delaying the inevitable, bro. Like, run while you can, stupid. Get out of Dodge. Don't hang around him. This is not the good play. But Maul is smart enough that he sweetens it. He makes Vario relax his intellect and say, oh, well, I'll stay here because this is where the power is. Oh, no. When he gave you the okay to leave, you should have left. You had the means to leave. You had the connections to leave. You chose to stay. This is all on you from here on out. Congratulations, dummy. You won the idiot prize. Like, the show could surprise me and Vario could get away, and I would accept that. But right now, coming out of season one, I'm like, Vario's cooked. He's done. He just doesn't. Yeah. He's dead. He just doesn't know it yet.
No, I love it, so, man. Can we talk about the animation? Because, both you and I have been watching, obviously, Lucasfilm animation since the very beginning. Both of us saw the original Clone Wars movie in the theater. The animation was lambasted. You know, people hated it. And I am going to say, I think that Lucasfilm Animation may be the premier animation studio out there right now, and I think it's partly because they're continuing to try and push the medium of animation as a art form.
Yeah.
They are not afraid to utilize all the tricks of a trade. I mean, they're using matte paintings in this. They're using models in this. They're using wind machines and dust. And like, they are raising the stakes as to what you can do in an animated series that just makes this an incredibly special season. And not only that, but, you know, one of the things that Disney did at the height of its animation reign was that each of the movies that were coming out would mimic the feeling and the culture they were making a movie about. So Hercules had this Greek feel to it with like what you would see on the Greek urns. You'd have Mulan that had this very wonderful Eastern Chinese feel to it. Perfect. They were doing those things and it worked so well. This show with the animation has an edge to everything because it's almost as like we're seeing things through Maul's eyes, the way that he sees the universe, which is everything has these jagged edges. Nothing is clean. And it's absolutely stunning. It's absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I cannot give more praise to the team at Lucasfilm Animation for the work that they're doing. And it's like, because we've seen Bad Batch, we've seen the Tales of series where the animation seems to have grown by leaps and bounds and what they're able to do. This, it's like, no, we're going to take this to a level we didn't even know existed. And that's fantastic.
I can't really add anything to that. The only thing that I will add is, yeah, the painterly approach is a wonderful reminder that animation is art, and it's almost like an art history lesson to look at this. And I'm such a fan of what they did. And yes, absolutely, the jagged edges, but it also, the visual style very much speaks to the idea of a world out of focus. The aftermath of Revenge of the Sith, where things are murky, they're a little messy, and they're out of focus. And I think that's really interesting because we know what world we're in, but also having the stones to come in and say, this is a different era, so we're going to have a different feel to everything. Now, Bad Batch has its own look and its own style, and it's beautiful on its own terms. This has its own look and its own style, and it's beautiful on its terms. Clone Wars grew and became beauty in its own terms, in its own style. That's what really sets apart Lucasfilm Animation, really sets it apart, is that each show, instead of carrying forward what came before to say, oh, this is what you like, we're going to do more of it, it says, no, this is a different story. We're going to have a different visual flair to it. And I think that energy comes across the audience as passion. And that is why the audience responds to it so well, because you have people will always respond to a challenge that says, I want you to grow. I want you to work on you. And I want you to bring something unique that only you can do. People will always respond to that and say, I got you, boss. If anything, Lucasfilm Animation is one of those places where I look at it and I say, when somebody asks me, what can LLMs, quote unquote, AI not do? I look at it and I say, it can't do that because this wasn't done this way before. And I will point to something like this and I will say, this is what we're fighting to keep, everybody, is the unexpected instance where somebody says, you know what, make it look like a watercolor painting.
Right. Look, that. An AI can't give you those type of matte paintings. It can't give you combining model work and matte painting and animation and all of these effects in the same way. It just can't. And like, I appreciate what you're saying, because I think this is the very hallmark of what George wanted when he started this animation studio. He wanted it to do the same thing that he did as a filmmaker, which is continue to push the boundaries of what filmmaking can do. They're pushing the boundaries of what animation can do by starting to incorporate live action elements in a way that you can't even tell that's the case. But they're doing it anyway, and it's because they have a real heart and passion for art and storytelling. And that is beauty.
And another thing that's beautiful, because I think this is a technical aspect that people don't talk enough about, is, in fact, the editing. And I'll point to so much about this is beautiful, but I forget which number the episode is, but there's an episode where basically we start off and we just keep going lower and lower into the levels. And the way that the shots stack on top of each other, they continually move downward and they stack in such a way that it's like the wipes in the original trilogy or a Kurosawa film, where you get this feeling of like, oh my gosh, like the lighting changes and the camera movement keeps going down, even though it's not the exact same type of shot each time. Like it just keeps going down, and you get this sense in a very quick succession of shots, oh my gosh, I've gone super low into the core of this planet. I'm way lower than I think I am right now. And even the fact that when you have that moment at the end of the fourth episode where you have the big fight and you have Maul fighting the Jedi up in the rafters with the assault on the main entrance happening, it's again that excellent sense of place. I can describe to everybody, well, Lawson's going in the main entrance down here where the stairs are, and you've got people on his left flank over here and his right flank over here, and he's got the cops coming in from slightly over to the left here, and then up here to the right of where Lawson is as he's facing the entrance, you have the Jedi fighting going up the different levels and the scaffolding and everything like that. And then you even have these wonderful music homages. I hear in the car chases, I heard episode 2 in there. In the fight scene, I heard The Matrix. But it's just like Williams. Williams, if you go back to original classical literature, you can hear Holst the Planets. You can hear the spotter music that was in there. And in this, you can hear the spotter music that's in there. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because I respond to it as an audience member. And I just think that those are technical aspects that people do not give enough credit to for bringing you into it.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you brought up the music, because the Kiner family, which is now scoring for this series, I think that the work that they're doing here in creating this is, it's great. I mean, utilizing bits and pieces from the prequels to, I mean, there is a moment there at the very beginning of the soundtrack, if you listen to it, there's a cue that takes reference from the Pride and Prejudice version that came out with Keira Knightley. Very similar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, because I haven't seen that, so I wouldn't catch that. Okay.
And so, but then there's all these other moments where reading interviews where they talked about the way they layered Devin's theme with Maul's theme, and actually they're completely similar to one another, so that they play with each other, and like they're putting the same type of thought process that Williams was putting into his Star Wars music. You know, when we've talked about many times, when Williams was inspired by a film, you could tell, and you could very much tell, I think, that the Kiner family was incredibly inspired by this show, and we can hear it. And that's what you want. And I've listened to this soundtrack kind of nonstop since it dropped. I've just been loving it. It's so great. And it makes me not be able to wait for season two, which we know is coming just because of the music, but for everything else. And so, John, look, we are going to talk more and more about some of the details and the implications on aggressive negotiations. And
we didn't even talk about the ships. We got to have a whole thing about the ships other time.
So what is your rating for Star Wars Maul-Shadow Lord?
What do you think it is? Here, let me ask you the question. On a scale of 5 stars, where do you think I put this show?
47.
That's a very conservative estimate, but I'll accept it.
500?
Yeah. 500, fool. Seriously, I don't have a single complaint about this show.
Same.
Not one.
No. Not one. I will say, I wish they could have gotten Paul Bettany.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can think of.
That one I'll accept because I thought you were about to come at Two Boots again. I was like, I will reach through the screen.
I was just winding you up because I knew how you felt about Two Boots. Right. So,
yeah, I'm just saying again, like you come at me about Two Boots, we're gonna have words. We're gonna have real words. I agree. It would have been nice to have Paul Bettany, but like, it's just, for me, that ranks up there with like. When I was talking with my friend Joey back when Clone Wars came out, and he's like, why couldn't they get Frank Oz? And I'm like, really? That's the hill you're going to die? Okay. All right. That's, and I know you're not being him about this, but it's like, you know what? It's cool. I thought the guy did a good, the voice talent did a good job with him. I was just happy to see him, but I'm still curious, where did he get the scars from? Gah! I got to find that out. Somebody write a book. Somebody have a
tale. Isn't that just because of the species he is?
No, I thought, I always interpreted it as he did, it was some relic-related thing.
I'll have to look, because I have the visual dictionary for, so I'll have to look that up. Anyway, this show is unrankable because it's just perfect. I think that, I explained this show to many people as I talked about it as it was airing. They had found a way to put prestige television into animation. Mm-hmm. And I feel about this show the same way I felt about the Andor seasons. It's just, I think it's just pitch perfect. There's like you said, there isn't anything I complain about. Yeah, Paul Bettany could have been in there. But does that detract? No, this is just perfection as a show. And I just can't wait for what we are going to get in season two. And I'm so thankful we know it's coming out. And so, I can't wait to, on Aggressive Negotiations, just dive in more to all the different little implications of all the ramifications of the things that we saw. It's going to be great. We have so much fodder coming. But John, the beauty is that not only are we going to have another crossover coming with Mando and Grogu, but I feel like we're going to have for like the rest of the year fodder for Aggressive Negotiations to talk more in depth about both of these things. And then knowing next year that Ahsoka season 2 and then Starfighter are going to come out, man, and Celebration, which we're both going to go to, man, 2027 is just going to be a rip-roaring great time for Star Wars. But if people wanted to catch up with you and talk to you more, where do they find you?
Look me up as Kessel Junkie online, KESSELJUNKIE. The social networks I prefer are Goodreads and Letterboxd, because I can't get into too much trouble talking about books and movies because I love to, and that's not controversial. And you can, of course, find me over on the Nerd Party Network on a show called House Lights that I co-host with Darren Moser and Tristan Riddell, and another show called, the show that's crossing over with this, Aggressive Negotiations with you, Matt. And I think that's a great way to kick it over and say, where else can people find you?
Yeah, all over social media. I'm under the name MattRushing02. Of course, you'll find me on the TFM network with all the great Star Trek talk with Chris Jones. So please check out all those shows, especially as Saddle Up comes back this summer. And then over on the Nerd Party network with Aggressive Negotiations, you'll find Outposts, where I'm talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. So, but John, I mean, I hear that they are going to be serving some medium rare filet at Rena's establishment. So I think it's time to close these negotiations.
Master Rushing, negotiations are closed, and y'all come back now. You hear? Thank you.